Senate Finance Committee will please come to order. It's Wednesday, May 11th, 2011, and we are going to start our agenda with Senator Daley and Senate File 1319. Good morning, Senator Daley.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members. There are three bills that we have, and they are all agency bills signed off by the Dayton administration. So I was going to do them separately, but Mr. Bodden approached me this morning and suggested that we put them all together, and I'll let him help us with the procedure on how we would combine these three into one.
Senator Daley, I think that sounds like a good idea. They're very brief bills, and we can package them all in one. It'll be easier on the floor. Senator Daley, do you want to explain it?
Madam Chair, I can explain the bills, or do we want to combine them first?
I think we'll take them one at a time, lay them on the table till we get to the last one, and okay. Then merge them.
Very well. The first one, Senate File 1319, historically specific rider language has to be attached to appropriations to the Department for Expenditures related to the veterans' homes. This bill eliminates that requirement. Senate File 1320.
Just a second, Senator Daley. Before we do that, I just wanted to declare a quorum, and then I think we want to lay Senate File 1319 on the table, and then have you take up Senate File 1320.
Sounds good, Madam Chair. As far as a motion, do you need someone from...
However, before I lay it on the table, I'm sorry, I just want to ask if there's anybody who has questions about it, about the process that we're going through. It's a commonly done practice, and we're codifying it. It's something that the department has asked us to do. Sometimes it's been done in another omnibus bill, but we're going to move it separately this time, and hopefully it'll stay put. Any questions about 1319? Okay, we'll set that aside, lay that on the table for now, and take up 1320.
Madam Chair, Senate File 1320 adds language which will authorize the department to provide new work therapy programs to residents and to utilize the profits from such programs in the same manner as other existing programs. So as you look at the language, we're just inserting "and other work therapy programs."
Do any members have questions about this provision? Is there anyone in the audience? Senator Magnus?
Just a comment, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Daley, for bringing this up. A few years ago, I did a bill with Representative McNamara and Norris on the wood shop stuff, and that's been a good benefit. Some of the folks, the veterans, are still going through stress even as they age, and so any therapy programs we can put together, I think, Senator, is a real good real good idea. So I appreciate your efforts in this.
Is there anyone who would like to testify on the bill? Any other questions from members? If not, we'll lay Senate 1320 on the table and take up Senate 1321.
All right, Madam Chair, members, Senate File 1321, the Department of Veterans Affairs currently has authority to apply for and accept federal funding for purposes related to the veterans' homes. This bill just allows Veterans Affairs to apply for federal funds for the programs and service departments as well.
Any questions about this provision?
Madam Chair, members, Mike McElhenney with Veterans Affairs was going to be here. He just hasn't been able to make it yet this morning. He was going to testify in favor of this, of course, since he is with the department and helped bring this language to us.
I don't know if there's any additional information. It's as simple as that.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. I think maybe we'll lay this one on the table and take up Senate File 1319 again. I think that'll be our base bill, And we'll turn to Mr. Bodern to help us move these bills together.
So, Madam Chair, the first thing to do then is to amend Senate File 1319 by including the contents of Senate Files 1320 and 21. Senate Files 1320 and 1321. So that's the motion you deal with first.
And Senator Perry moves that motion. Any comments? All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted.
And now, Madam Chair, the next thing to do is move Senate File 1319 as amended.
I would move 1319 as amended.
Senator Perry moves that Senate File 1319 as amended be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders.
Thank you, Madam Chair,
you,
members.
Senator Daley. These were about the three quickest bills we've ever handled here. next, we have Senator Ingebrigtsen. Oh, I thought he was just sitting at the table. Where did he go?
Morning, Madam Chair and members. I have with me today Mr. Don Carlos and Major Smith. If you have any questions with regards to the Senate File 943, and Senate File 943 is the Game and Fish Bill that comes through my committee. And I'm not sure, Mr. Bodern, as to what you would like to talk about here in this committee. I can certainly do a quick overview, Madam Chair, if you'd like, or you just want to get right to the financial part of this bill.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, I think we'd like to do a quick overview.
Sure. I can do that. What I'll do is go off of the Senate Council, just a quick overview here. Senate File 943 contains various game and fish laws. Section 1 is compensation for elk damage. Add some fence language eligible for compensation with regards to elk damage. Section 2 is state contract restriction aquaculture exceptions. Section number 3 is containment facility definition. Just some aquaculture definition with regards to obviously aquaculture. Section 4, fish collector definition. Section 5 is fish health inspection definition. Section 6, fish health inspector definition. Broadens the definition of health, fish health inspector. Section 7, fish sampling collecting, provides for fish collecting, collector training and certification. Section 8, fish health inspection, adds fish health inspection requirement for species on VHS susceptible list. Boy, that was a tough one. When there is a discharge to public waters. Section 9 deals with fish eggs and fry. Section 10 is sucker eggs. Section 11 and 12 is fish and wildlife planning, eliminates obsolete language relating to fish and wildlife planning requirements. Section 13 is the harvest of bait from infested waters. 14 game bird definition pertaining to basically to sandhill crane. Section 15, small game definition, talks about the gray wolf. Section 16 is the undressed bird definition as to how they transport birds after they're taken in the field. Section 17 is unprotected bird definition, Eurasian collared dove. That section deals with that. Section 18, wild animal definition. Section 19, emergency deterrent materials assistance. Section 20 is a walleye stamp revenue. 21, minnow harvest and designated wildlife lakes. Section 22 deals with license refunds. Section 23, civil penalty, dog mortality, wounding big game animal. Section 24 is gross misdemeanor penalty for hunting big game while under revocation. Section 25 is a pictorial stamp purchase. Section 26, game and fish license transfer. Section 27 deals with dealers, tanners, and taxidermist reports. Section 28 is elk license selection and how they select applicants. Section 29 is the turkey license issuance. Section 30 is ice fishing without a license in state parks. Section 31, non-resident fishing license surcharge with a youth exemption part of it. Section 32, possession of unlawful fish taken in Canada. Section, that, Madam Chair, that doesn't mean we've extended our jurisdiction. It just deals with fish from Canada. Just so it's clear.
Are you on, you're on Section 32?
Yes.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Certainly.
About Section 31? The license is purchased resident fee by non-residents under age 16, and now you're including them in a $2 surcharge. Is that correct?
I believe that's what it says. I'm sorry, I haven't been following, and I've been going off my sheet here, so I'll have the department answer that.
So it would be the... it would be for people under 21 who are non-residents. They would also have the $2 surcharge. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Mike Don Carlos with Minnesota DNR. I believe we're removing them from the $2 charge.
Oh, except. I see. That's earlier in the sentence. Okay, thank you.
Section 33, game bird transportation. Section 34, parent or guardian responsibility violation. Section 35, apprentice hunter validation requirements. Section 36, guns allowed while hunting by muzzleloader. Section 37 and 39, medical evidence for disability permits. Section 38, hunting hours. Section 40, possession of a firearm while hunting deer by archery. Section 41 is bear bait station identification. Section 42, taking elk causing damage or nuisance. Section 43, gray wolf open season. Section 44, shooting grouse near a motor vehicle. Section 45, waterfowl seasons. Section 46, fishing regulations, 1837. Seceded territory fishing regulations. Section 47 and 48 pertains to fishing contests. Section 49, fishing tournaments, invasive species. Section 50, sturgeon tag clarification. Section 51 deals with transporting and stocking fish. Section 52 pertains to price of game, fish fry, and eggs. Section 53, using aquatic life for bait. Section 54 is a Bowser powers clarification. Section 55 is coyote conflict management options. Section 56 is liability limits for walk-in program. Section 57 is rulemaking. Section 58, shallow lakes management report. And Section 59 is the repealer language.
Section 55, Senator Ingebretson, the counties or town boards have is this the first opportunity they've had to do this for coyote control, or have they been able to do this in the past? But I just wanted to know if I, because I would send something out then to notify them that.
Senator Ingebretson?
Senator, I believe this is actually the first time that townships, in fact, that was a bill that's been worked on over the last couple of years. So, yes, in fact, it is the very first time.
Okay.
Townships were very interested in that.
Senator Bonner.
Madam Chair, on the same subject, I was interested in that, too. We're having a very big coyote problem in Minnetonka. the coyotes just walk right across your grass in the front yard. But the city of Minnetonka is actually said that if you go after them in any way, that they get stronger, and grow in numbers because of then they breed bigger. And they have all sorts of reasons why this is they shouldn't do that. Is there any response to that?
Madam Chair and Senator, and I'm not sure if that's all of what Minnetonka is saying. They're, obscurely, it is theoretically possible to start removing coyotes and actually increase the reproductive capacity of the population. But in practice, I don't think that happens very often, but it is possible.
Well, Madam Chair and
Senator Bonham.
I'm sorry, I don't know your name, but I agree that didn't make sense to me when I questioned them, but that was what they said, and they have a brochure they send out to each resident who complains about the coyotes. So I appreciate seeing that provision. And then I had a question with regard to the being allowed to carry a handgun while hunting deer by archery. I'm not familiar with hunting statutes. Why previously were you prohibited from carrying a gun while hunting deer by archery? And could you address that?
Mr. Don Carlos.
Madam Chair and Senator Bonhoff, that provision would allow someone with a permit to carry that handgun while they're archery hunting. The reason that firearms have been prohibited for archery hunters is obvious. We don't want them using firearms, when they're bow hunting. But this change would allow those folks that have permits to carry to be able to carry their handgun while archery hunting.
Madam Chair, if I could just make one comment with regards to that. That's been thrown around for some years, and Mr. Don Carlos is correct. They can't. We certainly don't want them using that firearm while taking a deer when they're bow hunting. But I can also tell you that I don't know. I can't specifically tell you about the western states, but there are bow hunters that go out west and hunt bow where they have more encounters with grizzly bear and things like that, and they carry that gun along just for protection from those. So it isn't anything that's new. It's just that it requires them to have a permit to carry from the sheriff.
Okay. Senator Ingebrigtsen, how many elk do we have in Minnesota? I was just interested in the section on the elk hunting. Or Mr. Don Carlos?
Madam Chair, I don't have exact numbers in front of me, but it's in the range of a couple hundred throughout the state. There are two different population groups in northwestern Minnesota, one near Grigla and one further northwest. And the northwest herd is a little bigger, and I want to say in that 100 to 150 range. Grigla is around 50 or fewer. Those are rough numbers, so a couple hundred maybe.
So have you given permits for hunting them in the past?
Madam Chair, yes, we have. We have a limited elk hunting season in Minnesota. It's by drawing. It's a very limited number of permits.
Must be pretty limited if the herd's only that big.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Just for a point of interest, if I might, and I'd like these two gentlemen next to me, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's an interesting story in the northwestern part of the state with regards to elk, where there was an elk that was actually injured himself. Well, I think jumping a fence and ended up dying anyhow. But the rack on that particular elk has been measured by, I guess, the experts, and they claim that it's I think, and here I'm going to get into trouble a little bit, but number four, possibly even number three in the world as far as world record. It was found here in Minnesota, so just a real point of interest.
For a state that isn't particularly well known for its elk, that is interesting. The section about compensating people for crop damage, I was just kind of interested in that. And that's for the elk, too. What did we add there?
Fence damage.
Pastures and fencing? Because they when they jump them, they damage them, or what happens? Mr. Don Carlos?
Yeah. Madam Chair, that's correct. The elk are herd animals, and they will occasionally do damage to livestock fencing, and that's why that provision is being added in.
Do members have any other questions? Senator Nino?
Just to follow up on that, is this typically your typical fencing for cattle herds, or is this typically other fencing that, I mean, elk obviously have a pretty high jumping ability. I just was curious how it is that they're damaging fences and what. Could you give us a little more information on that?
Mr. Don Carlos.
Madam Chair, Senator Nino, basically they don't recognize the fences. They ignore them, and they go through them. Yeah.
Okay. I did have another question.
Senator Nino?
Unrelated, but did you have a follow-up? Were you?
Oh, go ahead.
Okay. On page 23, at the top of the page, they were changing the sale of game fish fry or eggs, and changing it from a fair market value to cost. And just wondering what precipitated that, why, what might the implication be for others that sell at fair market value? Could we be undercut? If we're selling at cost, how are we calculating cost? I know sometimes I will see cost estimates from governmental entities about how much they can, or how much less they can provide a service for whatever. And I question whether they've included all of the overhead that a normal business might include. You know, are they getting free rent because they're in a county office and they're not having to pay utilities and rent? And could you just talk about that a little bit?
Mr. Don Carlos.
Madam Chair, Senator Nino, this was a provision added by the aquaculture industry. The change in, you know, requiring us to not sell below cost versus fair market value, I don't think is going to have a great effect on the cost of selling eggs, but they requested that language. And then the second part is the industry has concerns about availability of eggs, and they wanted language and statute that would guarantee that they would have access to the eggs that they need for the contracts that they have.
Senator Nino?
Madam Chair, so mostly these sales are being made to those who would turn around and basically be selling at fair market value, and this is a, for lack of a better term, their seed stock, kind of, is, if I understood you correctly.
Madam Chair, Senator Nino, yes, I think that's basically correct. We would be providing eggs, some of which the private sector would produce into fry and sell on the market, but others they will be selling back to us under contract for stocking.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could either Senator Ingebretson or Mr. Carlos cover the issue regarding stamp issuance? On the fiscal note, it's noted as Section 26, but I think it's Section 25. It looks like your $2 fee to a fee that covers the product producer and mailing. If you just explain what it is you're doing there, your revenue going up and down, whatever it is you're doing.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Newman. Our Budget Oversight Committee, this has been an issue with them, and they requested this language. Under statute, we charge a nominal $2 fee for hunters who request an actual copy of the stamp that they purchase, and then we mail it out to them. Our costs are significantly less than that, so we've had a minor net gain to the Game and Fish Fund. This provision would tie the cost of receiving the actual stamp to our actual cost. That would be about 75 cents. So if it passes with the total number of stamps we sell, we would see about a $37,000 or $38,000 reduction in revenue. But that doesn't directly affect DNR staffing or budgeting, because that money simply would not be returned to the Game and Fish Fund. Those aren't funds that are immediately available to us within our budget. So the fiscal impact would be on the Game and Fish Fund, but not directly on the DNR.
So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Don Carlos, So you get, when you go to the bait store or whatever and get your license, you don't get the stamp unless you request it, and you're going to charge 75 cents more for that, but then you have to mail it out.
Madam Chair, that the first part is correct. Where a stamp is required, when you buy your license and you pay for it, you get an authorization on your license that says you have that stamp. Prior to ELS, we used to actually, have to have the actual stamp. But in the electronic age, we've simplified that. For those folks who like to collect the stamps or for whatever reason want to get them, they can request that we mail them the actual stamp, and that currently is a $2 additional fee. Under this bill, that fee would drop, would be set by the commissioner based on cost. Currently, it would drop to 75 cents. So it would cost the stamp purchaser less money than it does now to receive the actual stamp.
It seems really inexpensive to mail out a stamp, but the stamp has to cost something, and then you have to put a stamp on the envelope. But if that's what you've determined it is, I'm not going to argue. We should turn to the fiscal note now. And
Madam Chair,
that was part of it.
In reading the language here, they're talking about the actual cost of producing and mailing, which, 75 cents might cover that. But this kind of goes back to my earlier comment of I believe that the cost of producing and mailing is 75 cents. But if you were to incorporate all of the costs of receiving payment, processing the payment, the overhead for storage of stamps, the staff time to handle all of that. I'm not arguing for a higher fee, but this just goes back to my earlier point of it depends on what you're counting into all of your overhead costs. I can guarantee you that it costs more than 75 cents to receive the payment, process that, put this into an envelope, send it out. But I do believe that the cost of postage and producing that little sticker probably is 75 cents. I don't doubt that, but just it was a bit kind of a tangent on my earlier comment, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Senator New?
I would remind Senator Eno that this is a product that you've already paid for, you're just not getting.
I understand. Okay. I understand. I'm not arguing for a higher fee. I don't want that.
That's a good point, Senator Newman.
This one-time cost?
Shall we review the fiscal note? Mr. Don Carlos, did you want to do that, or shall we have our fiscal analyst do it, or what would you like to do?
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Don Carlos has described what is the most significant component of the fiscal note that's in your packet. It is the proposed reduction in that fee would be a reduction, estimated reduction in the Game and Fish Fund of $38,000 per year. That's the impact of the DNR. The Ag Department has also noted the need to do rulemaking as part of the requirements in this bill, and their costs are fairly modest, as indicated in their portion of the fiscal note. But because of the need to go through the rulemaking process, they're indicating a $500 to $1,000 cost, and that's also noted. There's no appropriation in the bill for that, so the Agriculture Department would absorb that cost under this bill.
Does anyone have any questions about that? Any further questions about the bill? Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against it?
Madam Chair?
Senator Langsa.
Madam Chair, have you heard any complaints from people that $2 is too much?
Mr. Don Carlos?
Madam Chair, Senator Langseth, no, I don't believe that we have, but it did become an issue with our Budget Oversight Committee, the folks who look at our stamp accounts and expenditures, and they feel that we're overcharging, and they wanted us to make the change.
Mr. Don Carlos, how many stamps do you issue every year? I know there's one for pretty much every form of hunting. Well, not deer hunting. I don't think you have one for that.
Madam Chair, about 30,000.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
And just for point of clarification, I just went and bought my fishing license a month ago. And they asked if I wanted a walleye stamp. At that time, I think they're $5. I think they're $5. That $5, I think the procedure is I would pay that $5. That goes into a special fund that actually stocks walleye in the state of Minnesota. That's a voluntary $5. If I want the stamp, that's what we're talking about, then it costs this extra money to get it actually sent back out to me if I wanted to collect that stamp, the walleye stamp.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, but the waterfall stamps are not optional, are they? Some of the stamps are optional to raise money for habitat for certain kinds of game or fish, but is it true that the waterfall stamps are required?
Yeah, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, any other questions? If not, Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that Senate File 943 be recommended to pass and be placed on general orders. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be placed on general orders. And Senator Ingebrigtsen, do you want to just stay up there? And we'll take up Senate File 411, the maintenance plumber definition, right away.
Madam Chair and members, this is a bill that's been worked on for some time with regards to the plumbing licensure, if you will, of the resort owners in the state of Minnesota. Senate File 411, Restricted Plumber Licenses Limited Transfer Authorization. With me today I have Mr. Carlson, who represents them, and I should probably turn it over before I get too deep into the weeds on this, turn it over to him and have him explain what exactly the bill does say. But as you know, and I've repeated this several times, that our wonderful resort numbers have dropped over the years, and since the 60s and 70s we had like 3,600 resorts in the state of Minnesota. Now we're down to about 900 statewide, and it's just one of those things that we're losing in Minnesota. I think that many people look forward to every year, and coming from the city to the to greater Minnesota, and I guess I've always found a place, not necessarily a place in my heart, but a place in my I guess it would be that, because I remember those days with my dad and mom going to resorts, and I know there's an awful lot of memories like that in the state. And wherever we can work to help keep the resorts open, it's always been near and dear to me, so that's why I carried the legislation. And I will turn it over to Mr. Carlson for a description on the bill.
Mr. Carlson, please identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I've long represented the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, which is an association of family-owned resorts in Minnesota. They are principally what you would describe as mom-pa resorts. They live at their resort. They work at it full-time. And I was just doing a little legislative history search before the bill came up, and in 2007, the legislature passed a bill related to people who were engaged in the business of plumbing and required them in cities under 5,000 to obtain a restricted plumber's license. When the legislation passed, we had inquired about resorters who do plumbing work on their own property. They open up the water lines, they change leaky faucets, and because we were not engaged in the business of plumbing, we did not believe that requirement applied to us. We found out later that it did. And in 2008, 2009, 2010, and now 2011, the legislature has come back and amended the restricted plumber requirement. And it has been a significant problem, both for resorters who were unaware that they needed to obtain a plumber's license, and actually the cost of the cost and the ability to obtain a licensed plumber to work on your facility many times, which are not available on a short-term or emergency basis, just been a drag. Senator Ingebrigtsen introduced the bill, and I want to briefly mention that because, Madam Chair and members, the fiscal note that you have in your packet relates to Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill as it was introduced, and that provision for transferring licenses is no longer in the bill. And so I just want to, I don't want to get into the fiscal note debate, but I just want you to know that what is before you is related to the first version of the bill, and that provision and that requirement is no longer in the bill. But what we've worked with the department on and what we're trying to get to is a maintenance plumber's license so that resorters can make an application, they can get the license, and they can work on their own property. There are, of the 900 that are left, there are a number of them that are operating without having a restricted plumber's license, which is not causing any harm to the public, but they don't want to be out of compliance either. And so what the legislation does is it creates a class of license, a maintenance plumber's license, that would be administered by the Department of Labor and Industry through an application process. But the key part of the bill that I want to point your attention to is on page 3, and just so that we're clear, on lines 3.30 to 3.32, the only people that would be authorized to have this limited maintenance license would be those people who are operating on property that is a Class 1 or Class 1C or Class 4C resort. So this doesn't apply to motels, hotels, anything else. It's only people that are doing work on resorts. So that is the bill that would get us out of the restricted plumber's license. It would get everybody in compliance. We believe it's a big step forward, and we would appreciate your support.
Are there any questions for members? Senator Newman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Carlson, define for me a Class 1C or 4C1 resort.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and are you testing me, Senator Newman?
No. I can
absolutely do it. Madam Chair and members, a Class 1C resort has some specific requirements in law to get a property tax classification. It has to abut Lakeshore. The owner of the resort has to live on the property, and it is restricted in their classification as to how big it can be. A Class 4C resort does not have to abut Lakeshore, and the owner does not have to live at the property, and they have a different tax rate on those more commercial properties that are not homesteaded properties. That is the main distinction.
Senator Newman.
Madam Chair, and then Mr. Carlson, where in the bill do we find the definition of a maintenance plumber?
Page 1, lines 1.9 through 1.12. Yeah, 1.12.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Carlson, how do we know that they have the necessary qualifications, training, and experience?
Madam Chair, members, that was one of the problems with the restricted license. You send in your application, and if you certified that you had done this work, you received the license. And we're at least now putting some parameters around that, where the plumbing board, I'll find the specific page in line, but where the plumbing board is going to develop some guidelines as to what a maintenance plumber license is, what their qualification needs to be. And I think it's on Section 6, line 5.8 through 5.12.
Senator Perry.
Madam Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, where has this bill been? Is this the only stop?
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and members, we've been to 2 stops in the Senate so far, jobs, and I thought we had
judiciary.
And judiciary, and then in the House we've been through jobs. I think it was in Commerce and Ways and Means, and it's on the House floor in the House.
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Bodern, can you help me with this? We're creating a new board with authority, and if so, would that not have to go through state gov?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Carlson.
The plumbing board has long been established. We're not creating anything new here. They already exist and have the licensing and regulatory authority over plumbing operations in Minnesota. It's not a new board.
Senator Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Then what I see on page one under subdivision two, powers, duties, administrative support. That is not new. It appears that this is establishing a new board to elect its chair, vice chair, and secretary, adopt bylaws.
Madam Chair and members, that's existing law right now. The only thing that's new is the addition of their ability to provide this maintenance plumber on page 2.7, or excuse me, 2.7, 2.9. All the rest of the language is not underlined. That's existing law.
Madam Chair.
Senator Perry.
Mr. Bodern, could you just help me a little bit? I think you know where I'm trying to get an answer here.
Mr. Bodern.
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, Mr. Carlson is correct. The language you see in Section 2 is existing law, and the Plumbing Board has long been in existence. As far as the jurisdiction of the State Government Committee is concerned, there is new rulemaking authority in here, and it's not reflected in the title of the bill.
Page 4. Would that be, Madam Chair?
Senator Perry.
Thank you. Would that be lines 4.30 to 4.35, Mr. Bonner?
Madam Chair and Senator Perry, that's correct. And Madam Chair, I'll also, I think this is perhaps a cross-reference, but page 5, lines 8 and 9 reference the rules regarding fitness of applicants for a maintenance plumber's license.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and members, certainly no intent to bypass any committee. We believe that the language relative to the Plumbing Board, which they already have, is permissive. And until they do that, this program is just going to be administered through an application process like they are doing right now with restricted plumber's license. And so we have no intention to bypass your committee, Senator, but we view that language as permissive. And until they decide to adopt rules, this program like it is now would just be handled by the commissioner through an application process.
Is there anyone in the audience who wants to testify for or against the bill? Senator Newman? Oh. Any other questions?
Hey.
Senator Perry?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What is really troubling me is the fact that the rules to evaluate whether an individual's plumbing experience is applicable and preparing for the maintenance plumber's examination.
If there's no other questions, Senator Nino?
I'll reach way out here. similar vein, and I don't want to do the work of other people's committees, but you went through Commerce in the House, but not in the Senate. Any idea why?
Mr. Carlson?
Madam Chair and Senator, I don't have a specific answer for that. I mean, I know it wasn't requested. It wasn't any attempt to not go there. This is now going on 4 or 5 years, but I've been on this issue, and for whatever reason, we've never gone to the Senate Commerce Committee, and we've always started out in the House Commerce Committee. For whatever reason, that jurisdictional changes, I don't know. So.
Each chamber's preference, I guess, where they originally referred the bill to. If there's no other questions, Senator Perry?
Madam Chair, I was just conferring with counsel, and I really believe this bill needs to move through state gov. This is new rulemaking authority, and we really vet that closely. I wish it would have shown that in the title, because as staff is looking through, you look at the title, and many of them show sometimes that there's rulemaking authority, and that kind of sends up the red flag, and I would request that this go to state gov.
Senator Perry, I think we'd have to refer it to rules first, and then if they choose to forward it to you. Senator, Mr. Bodden?
Madam Chair, the way this would work is the Finance Committee could recommend the bill pass and be re-referred to the State Government Committee. At the time the State Government Committee takes action on the bill, it would, if it recommended the bill to pass, it wouldn't provide a specific referral to the Rules Committee. That would happen automatically under Joint Rule 2.03 because it would be a late committee report. So that's the steps that would be followed in the process.
So it could go to State Government before Rules then. Okay. So that would be the motion then, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Certainly.
So Senator Ingebrigtsen moves that Senate File 411 be recommended to pass and be referred to the State Government Finance Committee. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be referred to State Government.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
And members, I think that... just a second. Okay. We're coming back 1 hour after session today, and we're going to start out with 1199, Senator Peterson's prevailing wage bill, and we are expecting a large audience for that, and the sergeants have asked that it be a ticketed event. So if someone's here, and they will only have so many seats available, so they're planning to ticket for it. So 1 hour, John in my office will have some tickets in advance if someone is interested in them. So 1 hour after session. Senator Berglund?
Madam Chair, it appears as if your committee and the Capital Investment Committee are meeting at the same time, so I would just request those of us on this committee that are also on the Capital Investment Committee that you come and get us for any votes you're taking.
Certainly,